From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. Merry Christmas. On today's Fresh Air, some great and some schlocky music for the holiday. In the great category, we have a concert by the Holmes Brothers. They've been singing gospel, soul, and rhythm and blues for 20 years. Also some Christmas music from Fresh Air Concerts Past by Susanna McCorkle and Charles Brown. And we hear from the duo that wrote one of the best Christmas songs, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. As for the schlocky music, we're leaving that to our rock and roll historian, Ed Ward, who has some examples of why Christmas can be a dangerous holiday musically. And the big family movie hit of the season is Home Alone. Critic Ken Tucker tells us about taking his kids to see it. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. The bodies of 20 U.S. sailors who drowned Saturday in a ferry boat accident off the coast of Israel were returned to the U.S. today. The flag-draped coffins were met by family members and government officials at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. A Navy chaplain hailed the dead as peacemakers who honored their families. 21 sailors were killed when a chartered Israeli ferry overturned Saturday as it was returning them to their aircraft carrier. One body hasn't been recovered. The sailors were returning from shore leave in the Israeli port of Haifa. The State Department says Salvadoran rebels are planning a major offensive once the 9-day Christmas truce is over. $42 million in military aid set aside for El Salvador were held back by Congress to encourage peace talks. NPR's Michael Richards reports.
The Bush administration says intelligence reports of a major rebel offensive in the making could lead the U.S. into resuming the military aid that's been cut off. Just before the 9-day truce took effect, there were a number of rebel attacks that left 16 civilians dead. State Department spokesman Richard Boucher said recent targets, which included banks and farms, had no military value. Under Congress's direction, full levels of military aid can only be resumed if Salvadoran rebels kill non-combatant civilians, or import substantial quantities of arms, or refuse to participate in peace talks. Though the administration seems intent on showing these conditions have been met, any administration attempt to reestablish aid that's been cut off could face stiff opposition from Democrats in Congress, who become increasingly impatient with the U.S. role in the Salvadoran civil war. I'm Michael Richards in Washington.
Israeli Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir says a war in the Gulf is closer than ever before. But Defense Minister Moshe Ahrens maintains that Israel will not launch a preemptive strike against Iraq. Linda Gradstein has more from Jerusalem.
Israeli officials were responding to Iraqi President Saddam Hussein's threat to attack Tel Aviv with missiles if the Gulf War begins. Shamir said the threat is nothing new and that Israel is used to such statements. Shamir also said that even though a war seems closer than ever before, Israeli citizens should not be afraid because the army is prepared for any situation. Defense Minister Moshe Ahrens also seemed unconcerned by the threat.
It's not the first time and it's not the last time we're used to these kind of bombastic statements coming out of Saddam Hussein, and it doesn't make much of an impression on us.
Ahrens also said that the army is on high alert because Saddam is unpredictable. The defense minister said Israel is not in the business of preemptive strikes. For National Public Radio, this is Linda Gradstein in Jerusalem.
Stock prices fell today in a short holiday trading session that was one of the slowest in years. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 12 points to close at 2,621.29. Declining issues led advances by a margin of 9 to 5 in light trading of 57 million shares. This is NPR News.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. To help celebrate the holiday, we have a concert by the Holmes Brothers. They've been singing a mix of gospel, soul, and rhythm and blues for about 20 years, mostly in bars and clubs around New York. But they didn't get much notice until earlier this year with the release of their first record, In the Spirit, on Rounder. And a lot of people had the same reaction when they heard it. They wondered, why did it take so long for the Holmes Brothers to get recorded? As soon as we heard the record, we invited them to Fresh Air for a concert. The concert was first broadcast in August. The Holmes Brothers are Wendell and Sherman Holmes, originally from Christchurch, Virginia, and Popsy Dixon, no relation, but also from Virginia. We'll hear Wendell on guitar, Sherman on bass, Popsy Dixon drums.
Please don't hurt me. I know I'm was wrong. Darling, please don't hurt me. Come on back where you belong. Darling, when no one cares, you understand me.
Terrific. I think the obvious place to start here is how come we haven't heard of you before? Where have you guys been?
Oh, man, mostly in the New York area, the tri-state area, you know, playing around the bars and clubs, private parties and stuff. We like old wine. We just become better, get older and more mellow.
Well, how do you feel about it having taken this long for you to have a record?
Well, I feel blessed at this age. Still pinching myself to see if I'm awake.
Who are some of the people you've each played with in addition to playing with each other, people who we've known?
Well, we played with Jimmy Jones, who of handyman fame. And we worked in clubs where we backed a lot of shows with people like Curtis Mayfield and Impressions and name some other fellas, Robert Harrison.
Jerry Butler. I used to be with Inez Fox at one time. She had a record called
Mockingbird.
Right. I was with her, Inez and Charlie Fox. And just a lot of black artists that we played with back in the 60s and 70s.
The kind of singing that you do not only comes out of soul, but it comes out of gospel music, too.
Absolutely.
And you sing gospel as well as soul music. Can I ask you to do a gospel song for us?
Oh, sure. Why not? Why not, man? Well, I say, do Lord, do Lord, Lord, remember me. Do Lord, do Lord, Lord, remember me. Do Lord, Lord, remember me. Do Lord, remember me.
Hey, when I am all alone, Lord, remember me. When I'm all alone, Lord, remember me. Lord, remember me. Do Lord, remember me.
Oh, when I was sick, Lord, remember me. Oh, when I was sick, Lord, remember me. When I was sick, Lord, remember me. Oh, do Lord, remember me.
Wait, don't sing one more time.
Lord, remember me.
Do Lord.
Do Lord.
Lord, remember me.
Yeah.
Do Lord.
Lord, remember me.
Oh, Lord.
Do Lord, remember me.
Hey, when all my friends are gone.
Lord, remember me.
Well, when my friends are gone.
Lord, remember me.
Yeah. When my friends are gone, Lord.
Lord, remember me.
Do Lord, remember me. Yeah, do Lord.
Lord, remember me.
Do Lord.
Lord, remember me.
Yeah. Do Lord.
Lord, remember me.
Do Lord. Remember.
Remember.
Remember me.
We've got the Holmes brothers in concert, and we're hearing Wendell Holmes on guitar, Sherman Holmes on bass, and Popsy Dixon on drums. Popsy's the member of the Holmes brothers who isn't really a Holmes brother. Popsy, how do you feel about that?
Good.
Now, did you all come up from the church? Did you all sing in church or hear music in church a lot before? I mean, when you were young?
Kind of, yes, we did. We used to... We heard a lot of our background is from the church, but also the blues, country and western. I would say it's a good mix of all three, really.
Popsy, let me ask you where you grew up and if you heard a lot of church music when you were young.
Well, I grew up, yes, I heard quite a bit. That was my basic thing. Don't go to church, you don't go out to play. So I had no choice but to go.
Did you sing in church?
Yes, I did.
Did you sing in falsetto in church?
No.
When did you start? I want you to do a song next that shows off your falsetto. When did you start singing in falsetto?
Well, later during the years. I started practicing doing it. I've been doing it ever since.
I always wonder how somebody knows they have a good falsetto voice. Like, what makes you start doing it?
I just tried it, and it came out. I've been just keep working at it.
Who did you hear that made you think I want to sing like that?
I used to listen to Smokey Robinson a lot, too.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, let's hear another song. This is the Holmes Brothers. They have a new record. It's their first album called In the Spirit. It's on Rounder Records.
When something is wrong with my baby, with my baby, yeah. Something is wrong, baby.
with me. If I know, baby, I know. I know that my baby's worried. Then I'll still feel that same old misery. We've been through, baby. Oh, baby. So much together. And we've been as one, baby, baby. And that's what makes it better. When something is wrong with my baby, something is wrong with me. Come on, Brother Popsy.
Can you say about that? That is just great. That was Wendell kicking off the vocals, Popsy Dixon doing the falsetto singing, and great performance. Who originally recorded that song?
That was Sam and Dave.
Sam and Dave. Yeah. So how long you've been singing that one? A long time.
We've been singing that one for, let me see, at least 20 years.
Well, you've got it down pretty well. Let's take a short break, okay. And then more of our concert with the Holmes Brothers. This is Fresh Air. back with the Holmes Brothers, a concert on Fresh Air, and they have a new record called In the Spirit on Rounder Records, and we've got Wendell on guitar, Sherman on bass, Popsy Dixon on drums. Wendell and Sherman are the Holmes Brothers. Popsy Dixon is no relation, but they've been playing together off and on for the better part of 20 years. How about a Jimmy Reed song? It's a Jimmy Reed song you do on your new record.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Brothers performing on Fresh Air. Tell me, who's the audience now for soul music and rhythm and blues and the gospel that you do?
Well, the audience is basically young, white,
yuppies,
and middle class, I guess.
And isn't that ironic? I mean, you know, the audience, I don't know, it seems that so often black musicians are the creators of a kind of music, and then a new music comes in style, and it ends up being often like white listeners who end up listening to it later. I don't know I'm getting at here, but how do you feel about that? That there's more of a white than a black audience for the music that you do?
I don't mind. I think that Maybe the black people are trying to forget the blues.
What about soul music, though? I mean, I understand, like, the blues had memories of the South and things that people tried to get away from, whatever. Right. Well, soul music, you can't say that about.
Well,
I don't know. You know, that's a good question that you pose, because it bothers me also. I don't, you know, my people, they don't really support us like I would like for them to do.
But I think that the media... I think that the media helps determine what people listen to.
Of course, yeah.
And, you know, what they are bombarded with imprints, I guess. And there they are.
So they
have a new music, sort of what they call rap, which I'm completely out of touch with, but maybe it's a generation gap.
I'm sure that has something to do with it, generation, you know. Is there a soul music circuit to travel on now?
Oh, it is, yeah, it is.
What is the circuit?
Well, it's a lot of clubs, you know, in different cities that have soul music. And you get on, it's like you say, on a circuit, and it's from city to city. It's mostly white, middle class clubs, I think.
So is that the circuit you've been playing?
Yeah, we've been doing a lot of festivals and clubs.
Mm-hmm. And how is your new record changing your life now?
Well, it affords us the opportunity to have more material things in life, you know, somewhat.
Were there hard years, you know, in the past 20 years making the go of it?
Of course, there were a lot of hard years, but it was all good. It was all good.
Well, I think that might have been hard in music, but I don't think it was really that hard. I mean, we did pretty well. I mean, as life goes.
Okay. Well, I wish you the best with the new record and with all the recognition that you're getting now. And I really thank you enormously for the concert. It was great fun.
Oh, thank
really
you.
Really like your singing and playing. Wonderful to have you all here. And the Holmes brothers, again, are Wendell Holmes on guitar, Sherman Holmes on bass, Popsy Dixon on drums. They all sing... most of the leads we heard today were done by Wendell and Popsy Dixon. And let me ask you to play us out with something.
Okay.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Additional support comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and Apple Computer in personal computing, providing the power to be your best. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
From Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air.
Let's go.
Okay.
Go, I'm waiting.
Watch
it.
One, two, three.
Thirty-seven years ago, Paul Blay, Charles Mingus, and Art Blakey made this recording of Santa Claus is Coming to Town. Great musicians can make even the most tired Christmas songs sound good. But rock and roll historian Ed Ward has some Christmas music for us that's beyond redemption. We have some of the great Christmas songs, too, including Charles Brown in concert singing his own rhythm and blues song, Merry Christmas, Baby, and composers Martin and Blaine telling the story behind their song, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Also, our rock critic Ken Tucker takes his kids to see the big family movie of the season, Home Alone. That's all coming up on Fresh Air.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Jessica Berman. The State Department is reacting sharply to allegations by the head of the Soviet State Security Agency that Western countries are trying to subvert the Soviet system. George Guetta reports from the State Department.
On Saturday, the head of the Soviet KGB, Vladimir Kryuchkov, said that the United States and other Western countries had sinister motives in offering to aid the Soviet Union. He said the West was attempting to impose an alien philosophy on Soviet society, and the aid offers were mere efforts to enhance the Western political presence in his country. The State Department called the allegations unfounded and inaccurate. It expressed concern that such a senior Soviet official would return to that type of inflammatory rhetoric, which, it noted, contrasts sharply with the otherwise improved atmosphere in U.S.-Soviet relations. Just 10 days ago, President Bush took steps to allow the Soviets to buy food on credit. He said his goal is to promote democracy in the Soviet Union. The National Public Radio, I'm George Guetta at the State Department.
The Soviet Parliament today gave broad approval to President Mikhail Gorbachev's plan to revive the flagging union. The Congress of People's Deputies today endorsed the concept of a new union treaty and approved a national referendum on stopping the breakup of the country's 15 republics. A federal appeals court turned back another effort by a Christian activist group to force hospital officials to reattach Nancy Cruzan's feeding tube. Cruzan has been in a persistent vegetative state for the last 8 years, and her family recently won a legal battle to have her feeding tube removed. Cruzan's condition has gotten worse since the feeding tube was removed 10 days ago. Protesters angry with the judge's ruling have been demonstrating outside the hospital. Julie McAvoy reports.
Reverend Patrick Mahoney, director of the Center for Christian Activism in Boca Raton, Florida, filed the temporary injunction on behalf of Cruzan, but the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that Mahoney failed to demonstrate a basis for a stay pending appeal. The three-judge panel also ruled that Mahoney has no standing to bring the appeal. Some 20 anti-euthanasia demonstrators have been protesting Cruzan's removal from the feeding tube, but this morning, as freezing temperatures set in, the number of protesters was down to three. Last Friday, a federal judge in Kansas City and the Missouri Supreme Court both refused to order Nancy Cruzan's feeding tube reconnected. Doctors say without the feeding tube, Cruzan will probably die this week. I'm Julia McAvoy reporting.
The nation's leaders scattered across the United States for the Christmas holidays today, but they're staying in touch to monitor the volatile situation in the Persian Gulf. President Bush spent the day before Christmas at Camp David being briefed by Defense Secretary Dick Cheney, who just returned from a five-day tour of the Gulf. Stocks fell Monday in the slowest session in 4 years. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 1237 to close at 2621.29.
This is Fresh Air. Let's face it, in addition to all the good cheer and goodwill the holiday season brings, there's also a lot of schlock music. Rock and roll historian Ed Ward has selected some of his favorite awful Christmas music.
You know, I finally figured out what makes the record industry flood us with Christmas songs each year. The answer is Gene Autry. Right, the cowboy? There he was, fading as a singing cowboy movie star when he wrote Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, thereby assuring his fortune for the rest of his life. So every year, there must be hundreds of hopefuls who remember that and give it a shot on their own. I wish they'd give up. Really, the vast majority of pop Christmas music is enough to make me think about turning into a Hindu. Well, maybe not. There's lots of terrible Indian pop music, too. But you know what I mean. You don't? Okay, you asked for it.
Mamacita. Donde está Santa Claus?
There it was, 1958, and I was an innocent 10-year-old who just discovered rock and roll. I had the radio on constantly, and just as constantly, I was forced to endure little Augie Rios singing Donde Está Santa Claus. The history of U.S. Central American relations is one of us interfering with them. I've always considered Augie Rios to be an act of naked aggression going the other way. But he was only the worst of a bad lot.
Bushels of fun. Now the jingle hop has begun. Jingle bell,
there was Bobby Helms with Jingle Bell Rock, the same man who gave us My Special Angel. But My Special Angel only charted once. I had to endure Jingle Bell Rock in 1957, 58, 60, 61, and 62. Strangely enough, there doesn't seem to have been a big Christmas hit in 59, although you can count on the radios having played the Chipmunk song and the ever-dreadful Harry Simeone Chorale's Little Drummer Boy. Maybe the idea was to get you to go to church where the music would have to be better. Of course, back then, I was ignorant of the fact that there was some actual cool Christmas music. Even though it was, at that time, the best-selling rhythm and blues single ever, Charles Brown's Merry Christmas Baby never came on New York's top 40 stations. Nor did some of the more irreverent stuff, like the Youngsters' only known record.
Christmas in jail, Christmas in jail, had a little too much to drink. Ain't got no bail, ain't got no bail, and I'm spending New Year's Eve in the clink. In the wrong lane, feeling no pain, suit my car to 75, ran right into, you can guess who, and they say I'm lucky to be alive.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year,
they're singing down the street, while everybody's having Christmas turkey, they give me bread and water to eat. Christmas in jail.
Over the years, some of my friends have done some fairly intensive Christmas research and have come up with some amazing records. Brian Cullman, for instance, has put out an hour-long tape every year for almost a decade with stuff that ranges from the most saccharine sentimentality to Zulu choirs from South Africa. And this year, the legendary record collector Eddie Gorodetsky released a CD on Columbia called Christmas with Eddie G, with a really eclectic collection on it, including Little Augie Rios, in case you thought I actually went out looking for that. So yes, there is good Christmas popular music out there, as those things go. But probably the best thing about Christmas music is that after Christmas Day, you don't have to listen to it again for, oh, at least 10.5 months. And having said that, I'd like to leave you with a bit of my favorite Christmas record, from the Temptations' otherwise undistinguished album, Give Love at Christmas. I'm sure you'll recognize it.
As I sit around by the fireplace, watching the gleaming tree, if I had one wish in this world,
Ed Ward is co-author of Rock of Ages, The Rolling Stone History of Rock and Roll, and he writes for the Austin Chronicle. This is Fresh Air. I share rock historian Ed Ward's feeling that Christmas is a bad season for pop music. I spent a lot of my childhood Christmases trying to avoid the Harry Simeone chorale recording of The Little Drummer Boy. This one made the top 40 every year between 1958 and 62. But Ed Ward has Christmas music he really likes, and so do I. In fact, some of it was recorded right here on Fresh Air, and I want to replay some of it for you. To start, we have a concert recording of one of the songs Ed described as cool Christmas music, a record that never got played on New York Top 40 stations in the 60s, even though it was the best-selling R&B single of its time. The song is Merry Christmas, Baby, and the composer is Charles Brown. Brown had 9 top 10 R&B singles between 1946 and 52. He's now making a comeback with a new record on Rounder, and he opened for Bonnie Raitt on her recent concert tour. This is from a concert Charles Brown performed for us in June 1989. And even though Christmas was far away, I asked him to perform the Christmas song so many people know him for.
They know me for that. No care where I go, whatever time of year, Terry. Merry Christmas, baby. You sure did treat me nice. Merry Christmas, baby. Sure did treat me nice. Gave me a diamond ring for Christmas. Now I'm living in paradise. Well, I'm feeling mighty fine. Got good music on my stereo. Feeling mighty fine. Got good music on my radio. Well, I wanna kiss you, baby, while you're standing beneath the mistletoe. Satan ain't coming down the chimney yet, too.
Charles Brown from a 1989 Fresh Air concert. One of my favorite singers is Susanna McCorkle, and in 1988, we invited her to perform a Christmas concert. McCorkle now records for Concord, and she's performing this month in the Oak Room of the Algonquin Hotel in New York. In her Christmas concert, she performed a song that I think has special meaning this year, with so many Americans being far from home in the Gulf.
Presents
if only in my dreams I'll be home for Christmas. If only in
Susanna McCorkle from her 1988 Fresh Air Christmas Concert. Lee Musiker accompanied her at the piano with Dean Johnson on bass. A lot of jazz musicians say that the Christmas song with the most interesting chord changes is Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. The song was written for the movie musical Meet Me in St. Louis, a Broadway adaptation premiered in late 1989, and for the occasion we invited to Fresh Air Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine, who wrote the songs for the film and the show. Judy Garland starred in the film. Martin and Blaine wrote Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas for her.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight. Yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year all our troubles will be miles away. Once again.
Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Terry.
Thank you for having us.
One of the things I really love about Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is that, well, so many of the Christmas songs have these, like, cheerful platitudes, and this is such a kind of brooding song about loss in a minor key. Tell me the story behind writing the song.
Well, it began with the melody. I found a little madrigal-like tune that I liked but couldn't make work. So I played with it for two or three days, and then I threw it in the wastebasket and forgot about it. But Ralph, bless his heart, tell her what how you reacted.
I remembered that little melody, and it kept haunting me. And I came into the room one day, and I said, Hugh, what did you do with that little melody that you were fooling around with at the piano, that was like a madrigal? He says, I threw it in the wastebasket. I said, oh, no. I think I've got a great idea. You mustn't do that. Let's get it. And so we dug around in that wastebasket, and we found it. Thank the Lord we found it.
Yes. And then we wrote a lyric which nobody liked, especially Judy, because it was extremely sad and tragic. Can you sing it the way it was, Ralph?
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. It may be your last. Next year we will all be living in the past. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Pop that champagne cork. Next year we will all be living in New York.
And we thought that was just dandy because it was a sad scene. But they said, no, no, it's a sad scene, but we want a sort of an upbeat song which will make it even sadder if she's smiling through her tears. So then we wrote the one that you know in the movie. And then there was another version, Ralph.
One day, Frank Sinatra called us and said he wanted to record the song, but he couldn't sing the line about, until then we'll have to muddle through somehow. So he said, give me a happy line and I'll record the song.
It was because of the title of his album, which was A Jolly Christmas. So he wanted us to jolly it up a bit.
And Hugh came up with the line, hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and Sinatra was delighted and recorded the song. In fact, he's recorded it three times.
Hugh Martin and Ralph Blaine. It's always interesting to hear songwriters performing their own songs. There's a 1956 album of Martin and Blaine doing their own songs. Here's Ralph Blaine singing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
When the steeple bells sound their A, they don't play it in tune, but the welkin will ring one day, soon. Have your yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. Next year all our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. Next year.
This is Fresh Air.
This is Robert Siegel. Coming up next on All Things Considered from National Public Radio, more on the crisis in the Persian Gulf. We'll hear from reporter Patrick Tyler about the mood in the Iraqi capital, Baghdad, and Koki Roberts reports on what the crisis in the Gulf means to Japan. Also news from Israel about the government's decision there to begin to study economic development plans for the occupied territories of Gaza and the West Bank. A report on a controversy in the U.S. on a toxic waste dump in North Carolina, and a campaign in a Vermont town to begin recycling batteries. Those stories coming up later on All Things Considered from National Public Radio.
We've asked some of our critics to talk with us about things that are outside of their usual beats. You might think our rock critic Ken Tucker leads a wild, outrageous life, up late at clubs and concerts. Actually, he's quite the family man. Here's his review of a movie he and his kids went to see.
The first time my children and I became aware of Home Alone was weeks before it opened. We were walking past a movie theater that had a poster showing a little boy wide-eyed with terror. The ad copy said something like, "Kevin's parents are going on vacation to Europe, but they've forgotten one thing, Kevin." When I read this out loud to my two girls, they shrieked with laughter. For days afterward, they kept saying, "Is Home Alone open yet?" Producer-writer John Hughes and director Chris Columbus had hooked my kids instantly. The idea of being left home alone is at once so exhilarating and so terrifying to a kid that it's irresistible. But I'm a very prudent dad, and I decided to wait for the reviews. Most of them said, "Yeah, it's okay, but there's an awful lot of violence, and it's very manipulative, and young people might be troubled by it." Well, then I knew we had to go see it. Reviews that warn you away from something because it might scare you or give you bad dreams, those tend to be the movies that have something going for them, that aren't the usual run of big-screen sitcoms or uplifting pap. I really like the first section of the movie, right after Kevin is left alone. He explores the house by himself, plays with the toys that his creepy big brother never lets him use, masters kitchen utensils, gorges on junk food, and watches junk movies on the VCR. After his initial horror and joy, Kevin settles into a routine, a child's version of what a grown-up, responsible life must be. Here he is, for example, performing his morning ablutions, talking to himself in the mirror.
"I took a shower washing every body part with actual soap, including all my major crevices, including in between my toes and in my belly button, which I never did before but sort of enjoyed. I wash my hair with the Don't Formula shampoo and use cream rinse for that Just Wash shine. I can't seem to find my toothbrush, so I'll pick one up when I go out today. Other than that, I'm in good shape."
The young actor here, Macaulay Culkin, is very sweet and very serious. He's not a sitcom brat or a prepubescent cynic. My girls are 9 and 5 years old, and we all found his reactions as an 8-year-old natural and convincing. But the girls liked the subplot a lot more than I did, the stuff about two bumbling criminals who try to rob the house while the young boy is there. The robbers are played by Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern in cartoonishly exaggerated performances. And while there were a few good slapsticky moments, I thought it all was a bit much. But the question remains, is this nourishing entertainment for young minds? We came away thinking it was. The discussion on the way home in the car focused on the responsibilities of parents. Our 9-year-old thought Kevin's mom and dad seemed so smart, how could they leave their kid at home? Whereas the 5-year-old thought the parents were, quote-unquote, bad. Bad, pure, and simple. My kids, by the way, must be instinctive auteurists. Take them to a video store and they're bound to ask for Adventures in Babysitting, Chris Columbus's previous film. On that one, however, the girls and I have agreed to disagree. I hate to sound like my old man or a movie critic, but that is junk.
Ken Tucker writes about popular culture for Entertainment Weekly.
¶¶
Our senior producer is Danny Miller. Our engineers are Ron Barron, Joyce Lieberman, and Audrey Voblaitis. Chris Spurgeon directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, by this and other NPR member stations, and by a grant from Talbots, retailers of women's classic clothing and accessories through stores and catalogs. 1-800-8-TALBOTS. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, the composer of the songs How About You, Old Devil Moon, and On a Clear Day, we talk with composer Burton Lane. Also, A Man and His Dogs. Artist William Wegman tells us about photographing his pet dogs, Man Ray and Fay Ray. I'm Terry Gross, and I hope you'll join us for the next Fresh Air.